Welcome, everybody. This is episode 11 of This Conversation Rocks. I am Diane.
And I'm Todd, broadcasting from a dumpy little rental property in Santa Barbara.
Which is way better than a dumpy little hotel in Dallas-Fort Worth, right?
I would think so, as long as the sound quality on this is better than, yeah.
I was going to say, your sound quality is way better. Or at least it seems to be. We don't sound like we're in a bathtub or, being held underwater like that one person on iTunes suggested. So that's all good.
Right. By the way, to people who were listening to last week's podcast that finally got put up, yeah, I know. The first 25 minutes sound like I'm underwater. I got it. After that, it sounds a lot better, though. Stick it with us. We're getting there.
And the difference was recording from the dumpy little hotel and recording from home.
Yeah, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, so we're working on it. It's a work in progress. This is episode 11, right? We're doing pretty good.
Yeah, episode 11. I mean, it's kind of a milestone, right?
Right. More than 10. More than 10. Less than Madonna, I hope. That's a Four Weddings and a Funeral reference for you youngsters out there. All right, so what are we talking about tonight?
I believe what we're talking about is something actually kind of serious, which is workplace bullying.
Yeah. So this is a subject that is near and dear to me in a lot of ways. And I was trying to look for a serious title, and then I decided that we should call it Workplace Tyrants or Petty Tyrants, because that's what a lot of these people really are, is they are petty tyrants. So yeah, that's our title.
All right.
That's
good.
So, in the interest of attempting to stick with our format, I was thinking Act One could be kind of a description of what workplace bullying is. And having been there myself, I actually was kind of surprised by what some of the things were that were considered workplace bullying when I started doing the research. So that was interesting. That was informational for me. First, I gotta ask you, have you ever been bullied in the workplace?
I was in the Army.
Okay, that's a fair answer. So,
but and this is gonna be an interesting conversation though, because I was in the Army, and so yeah, of course, right? There's some crap that goes along with being in the Army, as you might expect.
Right.
On the other hand, I have met some people who are probably too thin-skinned. I had a guy who I worked with for a little while who went absolutely nuts because his boss was screaming and yelling at him after, honestly, he'd fucked up the air conditioning in Dallas, Texas in 100-degree weather.
Oh, God.
And he felt that he was being bullied over that. I don't think that that was actually a case of workplace bullying. I think that was a case of fucking up and people are angry at you. So...
So I think that it could potentially fall under the definition of workplace bullying. We'll take a look at it.
All right.
So,
and I mean, I could ask you the same question, although your response will at least be start with, yeah, but you've been to nursing school, so
exactly. Yeah. My response would be, I work in healthcare, so. But the really sad thing is I have thought about every nursing job or nurse practitioner job that I have had since I got out of school. And I can honestly say that my current job is the only one where I felt like I have not experienced peer-to-peer or manager-to-peer bullying, which is really sad.
Yeah, because you've been out of school a little while.
I've been out of school since 1996. So yep. That's super sad. And it's not to say that it was persistent, and it's not to say that every job was horrible, but I left several jobs because of situations that were essentially workplace bullying. And it's really, really sad to think back about that.
And so let's see if we can get this defined a little bit better then.
Okay, so I found actually a really nice piece of information about workplace bullying from the Washington State Department of Labor and Industries. and their website is www.nobullying.lni.wa.gov. And they define workplace bullying as repeated unreasonable actions of individuals or a group directed toward an employee or a group of employees intended to intimidate, degrade, humiliate, or undermine, or which create a risk to health or safety of employees. So, kind of going back to the guy that you were talking about, I would say, certainly what he had was what he experienced was humiliating. I think the place where it doesn't fall under bullying is that it was not, at least we don't think it was, a repetitive occurrence.
No, it was.
It was kind of a one-time explosion, but we don't know if
Yeah.
that necessarily is something that that person experienced on a regular basis with his boss. So that might be where it could fall into bullying. And they do say, they point out in their definition that that's where workplace bullying differs from just simple aggression, is that bullying is a repeated action.
Okay, good.
So, there was a study in 2006 that this Washington State website talks about. 41% of workers reported some sort of psychological aggression in the workplace within the past year. In the same study, 13% of those workers said that they experienced some sort of aggression, psychological aggression, on a weekly basis. So those are really the people who kind of fall into that category of bullying. And this study is representative of 47 million US workers.
Pretty substantial
That
number.
is a really big number. And it becomes more significant when we start talking about the cost of bullying, the high cost of bullying. So, some of the examples that they gave of bullying were unwarranted or invalid criticism, blame without factual justification, being threatened or treated differently than the rest of your work group, being sworn at. Now, I gotta tell you that, so there, to me, I will say there's a difference than swear difference between swearing and being sworn at. Like, I've got a pretty dirty mouth and I have to really rein it in, but there's a big difference between swearing and walking up to somebody and calling them something foul. I mean, there's a big difference
Well,
between
sure.
being walking up and saying, "You motherfucker," versus saying, "Ah, fuck, not again." So that's kind of where I draw that line. Other examples include exclusion or social isolation. So, kind of being that one person that nobody ever asks out when the crowd is going out, or even stuff like putting you in the excluded workplace, like sticking your desk off into the place where nobody else works, kind of
Okay.
physically excluding you from the group.
Sure, I can see that.
Other things, being shouted at or humiliated. So again, that the thing that you brought up at the beginning, possible, but again, it would be repeated episodes of that. Excessive monitoring or being micromanaged. And I hadn't.
Wait. Okay, but
No,
wow.
go ahead.
All right, you know what the definition of seagull management is?
What's that?
I fly in, squawk a lot, shit all over everybody, and fly out.
Okay, I've heard that before, but I've got to tell you, when I read that, the medical director at my last job was a total micromanager, and I felt
Oh.
like no matter what I did, she was constantly looking over my shoulder, just waiting for an opportunity to criticize. And
And I don't doubt that for a minute, and I don't doubt I'll just ask the question because I'm sure I'm not the only person out there. But isn't some of this just life?
well,
I mean,
sure.
I've worked for a bunch of assholes who are micromanagers, and I've let them know at some point or another that I thought they were an asshole, usually when I quit, and they're like, "What happened? What do you think?"
And I think it's the degree, and I think it's the degree to which it impacts your ability to perform, and the degree to which it impacts your ability to tolerate your work situation. I mean, any one of these things could be something where someone has an off day and it happens. And wow, that day really sucked, but you move on. But if it's something
right, well,
where it's, you know, you're constantly under the microscope or you're constantly under this kind of pressure, then it becomes bullying.
This is an interesting conversation because, you know, there's at least part of my brain that's screaming, well, that's just the shit you put up with for being in the workplace sometimes. On the other hand, I think that there's probably some validity here that maybe I haven't considered before.
Well, and you know, that's what I was kind of saying earlier, which is that I looked at some of these things and thought, wow, that's not really something I would have thought of as bullying, but then it really resonated with me. I mean, when I thought about how much working under someone who is such a micromanager, like down to the degree of telling me how to word things in my documentation, that was really not okay with me, you know?
Well, that's kind of interesting because you're a nurse, so that, I don't know, that could really kind of get towards telling nurses and physicians how to write the reports, which wouldn't really be a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, it was interesting. And then the last example that the thing from the Department of Labor at Washington State gave was being given unrealistic work deadlines. So kind of being set up for failure. So,
okay, but
you know, and again, right, it could be something where you're like, okay, that happens every day, but it's more to that, okay. I think it's more to that place of not that this is really hard and this is something that is unrealistic, but more to that degree of we're setting you up for failure so we can screw you. That's how I interpreted it.
Oh, sure, sure.
So they also talked a little bit about corporate or institutional bullying, and they said that that's basically what happens when bullying becomes entrenched in an organization and becomes part of the workplace culture. And it brought to mind a phrase that you and I have often thrown back and forth, and I said this to you early on in my career, nurses eat their young.
Yeah.
So in a way, bullying is entrenched in the way that nurses are educated and nurses are kind of brought up in healthcare. Nurses are very hard on each other, and it's a sink or swim kind of profession. And if you can't swim, fuck you. You better sink then, and you're going to sink and nobody's going to save you, at least in a lot of settings. I've worked with an awful lot of nurses like that. So
okay.
I know, it's depressing. Fortunately, I also worked with some nurses who were willing to throw you, you know, a life jacket and pull you out, because those folks are the reason that I'm still here. So some of the stuff about corporate or institutional bullying, basically the corporation places unrealistic expectations on employees. Where failure to meet those expectations means that they at the very least will make life unpleasant, or they will dismiss anyone who objects. They also dismiss employees who are experiencing stress as being weak, without considering that the work environment might actually be a cause of the stress that the employee is experiencing. And some of these corporations even go so far as to encourage employees to fabricate complaints about other employees with promises of promotion or threats of discipline if they don't follow through. And for people who are on the outside looking in, thinking about taking a job at a corporation, things to look for and things to run from include a group that's failed to meet organizational goals, a group that's got increased frequency of grievances, resignations, and requests for transfers, a group that has increased absences due to sickness, and a group that's got increased disciplinary actions. So I'm not really sure how you're going to find out all of that stuff. I mean, you can certainly look for...
That's called consultants.
What do you mean?
That's every consulting firm in the world you just described.
Well, yeah, right. That's what consultants look at and look for, right?
No, I'm saying if you work for a consulting firm, that is what your life is every single day. That is exactly what happens every day.
Enlighten me. I haven't worked very much with consultants, and I've never worked for a consulting firm, so I'm feeling a little stupid right now.
Okay, I mean, it's kind of a simple equation, right? You're going to bill, and accountants can tell you this, lawyers can tell you this, working for large firms, consultants, whatever, right? It comes down to, you got to bill X number of hours every year. And if you don't do that, you're probably going to lose your job.
Right.
And it is sink or swim, and people treat you like crap the entire time until somebody realizes, hey, this guy just billed, 30% over his hours. Then you're good. But next year, if you're 10% below, fuck you, you're gone. I mean, that's...
Wow, I feel so naive because that sounds really fucking miserable. That sounds like the last place in the world I would want to work or the last way in the world I would want to live.
That's why people do it for a while and they move on. But you gotta understand, right? Along with all this bullshit comes ridiculously good salaries. Opportunities to go work for somebody else where you're gonna make probably even more money.
But my point
it's
is,
all
a lot of people...
It's all a trade-off.
My point is, though, a lot of people experience this shit and they don't get ridiculously good salaries. I mean...
Oh, yeah, no. I'm not saying, that there's no validity here. There's a lot of validity. But I'm just laughing because I'm like...
That there...
Yeah, no, that just describes every consulting firm I've worked for 10 years.
Sure, so there are people who willingly submit themselves to this model because of the gain that they get.
It wasn't willingly, because nobody tells you this shit when you walk in the door. You figure it out as you go.
But I mean,
I'll just give... High turnover and all that, yeah, absolutely.
I'll just give you an example. Like, there is a local restaurant that I still won't go to 5 years out after seeing a patient because of the way that she was traumatized by working for them as a waitress. They treat their employees so horribly. And she actually filed an I'm not going to be able to spit it out, an equal opportunity employment claim against them, and was fighting them when she came to see me for treatment of her depression and her PTSD. And
I was horrified. I get it, and I'm not making light of it or, taking away. Depending on where you're standing is what you're seeing.
I suppose that's very true.
And shit happens every day. And, again, depending on where you're standing, but yeah.
Sure. So a lot of what we're talking about also that we haven't really named is hierarchy and power differential.
Well, yeah, but the guy at the top gets to make the rules.
Right.
If you want to make the rules, you got to be the guy at the top.
Right.
If you want the rules to not apply to you, you just got to make the guy at the top a lot of money.
Or if you want the rules not apply to you, you have to do what you've done and strike out on your own and make your own set of rules.
No, because then I'm the guy at the top. But let me be clear, right? It's not like I don't answer to people. Sorry, this is getting a little far afield, but... it's not like I don't answer to people because two things. First of all, I answer obviously to my clients wholeheartedly. Second of all, I am actually a corporation, a small corporation, but at some point, I'll actually have to, answer to shareholders and a board, a board and everything else. So it's always work for somebody.
Yeah, I guess.
But I apologize because I think I got that a little far afield. It's true, right? Because I'm sitting here thinking about all this stuff, and it really depends on where you're standing. And, we could talk about it from the standpoint of what is customary, and that's not a good perspective, right? Because just because you did it this way before doesn't mean you should keep doing it this way. But... there are lots of environments, like the Army comes to mind, military in general, right, where how else are they going to do it, right?
Right.
So.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wow, I've got a lot of I got a lot of questions about this topic.
I guess I don't know that I have a good answer for that. I mean, I think there are certainly environments in which you are actively trying to break down the person that you have in front of you and reshape them. I mean, certainly that is the model that the military is looking at, and to a certain degree, that's the model that at least the early part of nursing education is looking at. I mean, I very much felt like my bachelor's program was about breaking me down and trying to make me into someone different, which, by the way, they didn't succeed. But
I would have been surprised if they had. Well, then, so let's talk about the second thing, which is the cost of all this.
Right. So this is kind of our act two. But wait a minute. I did want to talk about that Forbes article real quick, so bear with me. I thought it was impressive that this is a big enough deal that it actually made an article in Forbes in 2012. So this is an article from Forbes, and it's called 10 Signs That You're Being Bullied at Work. And I just kind of took them in order. So 10 is work means misery, which basically means you are anxious or physically ill prior to going into your job. Number 9, constant criticism, which basically means you're experiencing constant criticism of some kind from either a coworker or your boss. Number 8, lots of yelling. You're frequently being yelled at, insulted, or humiliated in front of others. Number 7, remembering your mistakes. If your boss or your coworker makes constant references to your past mistakes for no constructive reason, that's bullying. Falsely accusing you of errors is a common form of bullying as well. What's that?
Yeah, I've seen that shit, for sure.
Number 6, gossip and lies. Spreading gossip and failure to stop the gossip are both forms of bullying. Number 5, you're not invited to lunch or other meetings, so you're singled out, isolated socially or physically. We mentioned that earlier. Number 4, you always need mental health days. So your PTO is used for mental health days. On your actual days off, you feel lifeless, and your family members are frustrated by your obsession over work. And I can tell you, I have been there. I have to tell you a little story about leaving my last job. I actually took a pretty substantial pay cut going from my last job to my current job, and really struggled with that because it hurt. And I actually ended up calling my mother-in-law, who's pretty fiscally savvy, and I said, I need some help because I need to know what to do. And she said, I know how miserable you are in your current job, and I know how bad it's been for you. Take the new job. Everything else will fall into place. And for my mother-in-law to say that, to recognize how deeply impacted I was by my previous job, that was pretty big. It was pretty big. So just recognizing how much a bad job or a workplace bully can impact your family is a big thing. So number 3 from the Forbes list, sabotage. So people find ways to ensure that you fail. They change rules on the fly. They don't do tasks that are crucial to your success. So they don't sign off on things that they need to sign off on. They fail to pass on messages to you, those kinds of things. Number 2, setting up impossible schedules. We talked about that. Doing things like setting up last-minute meetings on a night when they know you have somewhere else you have to be. And then number 1 is stolen work. So people steal credit for the work that you've done. And just some stats from the Workplace Bullying Institute. And these are from 2014. So 20% of the people that they've looked at say that they have been bullied. 7% say that they are currently being bullied in the workplace. 21% say they've witnessed bullying in the workplace. 23% say they've been aware of bullying in the workplace, and 20% claim to have been unaware of any bullying in their workplace. When you really cut the numbers down, 1 in 4 either previously were bullied or are currently being bullied in the workplace. So that's pretty significant. 1 in 4 employees. Okay, now we can move on to cost, which is Act 2. So I posted a thing on our Facebook page, which is a way for people who are being bullied to actually sit down and calculate the actual cost to them and to their company of their bullying experience, including things like time lost, healthcare cost, lost productivity, those kinds of things. So, and there's a reason that I put that up that we'll talk about a little bit later. So the thing that's really important to understand about workplace bullying is that it's really expensive. There was an article at Investopedia.com. A researcher from Stanford estimated that productivity could decline by up to 40% when there's an active bullying incident going on in the office. So that's a pretty big number.
Yeah, it is. It is.
You know, and the researcher said that it's basically a combination of loss of motivation, people are distracted, and people, when they're feeling bad about when their morale is bad, they avoid putting extra effort into things and they avoid putting any extra effort or extra hours into their work. So you're losing
Sure.
productivity that way. The other thing is, in terms of lost time, in terms of people taking off sick days because they're trying to avoid their bully. This is a number that came out of the UK. I couldn't find any solid numbers for the United States. This also comes from the Investopedia article. 18.9 million working days per year are estimated to be lost in the UK every year because of workplace bullying. And that translates to a loss of 18 billion British pounds yearly, which is 8 to 10% of a company's yearly profits. So that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and I kind of looked around for an equivalent in US dollars or an estimate of how much we lose in the US annually because of workplace bullying. And then the only number that I could really find was it looks like we lose about $4 billion a year in the US to this issue. So that's a lot of money, $4 billion a year. Basically because people can't behave like they graduated from high school. So,
That's a big part of it, though,
it
right?
is a
People
big
just
part
can't
of it. I
behave.
mean, people just can't act like grown-ups. So another big factor is employee turnover. So it's estimated that up to 30% of people who are bullied quit. Up to 20% of people who witness the bullying will also leave. And the numbers may actually be as high as 70% of people who are bullied actually leave the job ultimately. So the economic impact on the employer is that they have to recruit, hire, and train people to fill those positions. So they're losing a knowledge base, and then they're having to spend all the money to replace that knowledge base.
Yeah, and that's a big one. I mean, because I, again, consulting, I mean, that's what you see all the time. People leave because they can't take any more of it for a variety of reasons, not least of which is that, you're generally in a bad situation. Bosses are generally bullies. And then they leave and you lose, man, you'll lose a ton of institutional knowledge.
I really see that in nursing. I worked in a small rural hospital several years ago, and we had a CEO come in who basically decimated that hospital. He was such a tyrant and so terrible that by the time all was said and done, and interestingly enough, I was the first one to leave, and I predicted to everyone else that it was going to be a tragedy. I
Yeah.
said to them that I was not going to be the only one to go. By the time I left, they had lost at least two physicians. I want to say more, but I can't remember. And we're talking about a hospital that had a maximum of four physicians on staff at any given time. They lost the bulk of their experienced nursing staff. When I go there now, I recognize three or four of the staff. And at the point that I work there, I want to say we had a staff of like 18 or 20.
Yeah.
They lost their entire physical therapy staff, and they lost a fair portion of their admin staff as well. And the sad thing is they also lost their reputation in the community. I mean, I have people from that community who are still very good friends who say, "I don't go there for my care anymore." And the
Right.
extremely sad thing is a couple of my friends who were physicians there spent a long time rebuilding the reputation of that hospital, spent a long time regaining the trust of that community. And in less than a year, this administrator came out of nowhere and completely undid all of that hard work.
Well, and this is the thing, right? This is not an uncommon story.
No, it's not. It's definitely not.
And, so this lends itself towards the, hey, maybe we don't need to take this kind of shit from people. I don't know. Interestingly enough, although they haven't really proven it, numbers tend to indicate that you have a high number of functioning psychopaths serving as CEOs in this country.
Well, I would say that this person definitely meets that definition. Absolutely zero conscience.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing when you start looking at it and the way American business is run. And, it is the one place, oddly enough, American business is the one place where being a psychopath actually gives you career
Yep.
longevity.
Get you further. All I know is that this person not only managed to hang on to his job for quite a long time, past the loss of a well-loved physician and a very long-established nursing staff, but he also managed to be promoted to a higher position at another rural hospital.
Oh, that's the thing that just drives me nuts. And I'll save my Carly Fiorina thing for oh, by the way. But yeah. All right. So I mean, this is really expensive to American business, and maybe we ought to pay a little bit more attention to it as business owners, as employees. So what do we do?
Well, so, a little bit more before what we do, just some things to think about in terms of economic impact on the employer. So, not only are you looking at the expense of replacing those employees, but you also have to think about the damage to the working environment and the morale of the remaining employees. And you have to think about the impact on the reputation of the employer, like we were just talking about. Some other things that you need to think about are the medical costs to the employees, and ultimately the employer is responsible for that in terms of health insurance premiums, in terms of sick leave, and in terms of workers' comp claims, because many times employees who are bullied experience anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress, and they also experience physical symptoms like high blood pressure, migraines. So they really do incur some medical costs that they would not otherwise be dealing with if not for the bullying situation. There are also legal costs that many of these companies find themselves facing. There have been court cases in which companies have been found liable for the actions of the bully. In fact, according to this article that I accessed, there have been, quote, extreme cases where there have been millions of dollars paid out to the target of the bully by the companies that enabled the bully to continue to target that person. So it's expensive for that employer in a lot of ways, not just replacing a lost employee. The other cost that people may or may not think about is that you need to think about rehabilitation costs, because not only are they paying for counseling for the victim, but they're also often responsible for rehabilitation for the bully, like anger management classes, team building, sensitivity training, and also counseling for the bully. So it just becomes a tremendously expensive prospect all the way around. Yeah, I mean, it's a big subject, so it really,
There's another part of it too, though, which is simply this. and I know we've all seen this too, right? Which is that human resources just doesn't do their job. And management doesn't do their job. And you have people like this who are problems. And they don't do their job to get rid of these guys.
So here we go, you know, and I don't know if I put the numbers in this next section or not. I sure hope I put the numbers in here. But basically, people who are bullied are the most likely to leave, and the bully is more likely to be promoted.
Right, yeah, again, you know, psychopath.
Right.
101.
And I'll talk about it, but one of the recommendations that's made for to people who are looking at dealing with their bully is to not take their case to human resources.
And why not?
Because human resources doesn't do shit. Just exactly what you just said. So that kind of takes us actually to Act 3, which is how to stop workplace bullying or how to deal with workplace bullying.
Okay.
Okay, so this is Act 3, which is really all about how to deal with workplace bullying or how to try to stop it when it happens. So this comes from a group called the Institute for Workplace Bullying, or the Workplace Bullying Institute, sorry, and that is workplacebullying.org. And they have some specific recommendations about how to deal with it. So they have three basic steps. They say the first thing to do is to name it for what it is, to actually say that out loud that you are being bullied in the workplace, which sounds kind of goofy, but it's one of those things where it's name it for what it is. It helps externalize it. It helps kind of take a little bit of the power out of it, and it helps you to get out of that cycle of blaming yourself, and it helps you realize that you didn't invite the problem, that you didn't start the problem. Because I don't know about you, but when something goes down, when something goes bad at work, I tend to blame myself before I blame anybody else. So this is just a way to kind of help you realize that you didn't create this situation. Their next recommendation is to take time off to help heal and launch a counterattack. And so they actually specifically recommend taking either some paid time off or getting a slip from your healthcare provider to use some short-term disability. And then there are five specific things that they want you to do while you are using that paid time off. So the first one is to get some counseling. And the reason that they want you to get counseling is to get really clear about what's going on. You need to decide whether you're going to leave the job or whether it's worth it to stay and fight. And the ultimate recommendation is to do what's best for your emotional and physical health. And one of the recommendations that I thought was really interesting is they recommend not accessing the employee assistance program. So they really want you to use a private counselor rather than doing counseling through employee assistance, which I thought was kind of interesting. It sounded a little bit conspiracy theory-ish to me, but that was their recommendation.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much access the employer has to the stuff that's talked about in employee assistance counseling. I do know it's a fairly limited program. There's only a certain number of visits allowed. So I would certainly want to have an opportunity to have kind of open-ended counseling, because this kind of bullying can actually trigger other stuff for people who've experienced bullying or trauma before. So it's good to establish a relationship with someone that you could potentially see in the future if you needed to continue counseling.
Yeah. Okay.
So the other thing was take some of this time to check your physical health and make sure that you're physically okay. One of the things is to make sure that your blood pressure is under control, to make sure that some of the other things that could contribute to poor physical health, like heart disease, cholesterol, blood sugar, those kinds of things are under control as well. You know, some of the things that we do when we're stressed out just contribute to being even more sick. We don't eat right. We don't exercise. We don't manage our stress, and so we could potentially develop a whole host of physical problems to go along with the psychological issues that are coming up during a workplace bullying incident. So make sure you get in with your healthcare provider and get some basic testing done. They also recommend researching state and federal options. They actually said that at least a quarter of bullying cases actually have discrimination involved as well. So you really need to look at whether or not this is just pure and simple bullying, or if there's actually some sort of discrimination occurring as well. They recommend consulting an attorney. I think that's great. I don't think that's necessarily realistic for everybody. Not everybody can afford to do that. There are some groups that will do pro bono work. I know Alaska has a group called Alaska Legal Services that can help in situations like this, and I'm sure that most other states have similar organizations. So it would be important to do that kind of research. Do you know offhand if there's anything like that in California?
No idea.
So, you know, but Google is pretty friendly. It's pretty easy to find stuff like that on Google.
Exactly.
The other thing that I would say that they recommend that I think is really important is to look for internal policy violations. So you want to see if the person who's bullying you is actually violating policies about harassment, about workplace violence, and about workplace respect. But they do warn to expect retaliation on the part of the bully. And I do think that that's very important to recognize that that's going to occur once you bring this bullying to light.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Another thing is make the bottom line business case for stopping the bully. And this is the place where you use the little cost analysis device for estimating how much it's costing the business to keep the bully present. And I did post a link on our Facebook site about that takes you to that link. And then the fifth recommendation that they had for your time off was to actually start a job search, which I think is really smart. I mean, you never want to be in this position of potentially losing your job without having a backup plan.
Well, and I think you have to be realistic, right? When things are really that bad, leaving might in fact be the best option.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that they said was going into their next step of their three-step plan. Step three is expose the bully. And they preface expose the bully with, your risk didn't start with making the decision to expose the bully. Your risk of losing your job started when you were targeted by the bully. So 77.7% of all targets lose their jobs. And
yeah,
they recommend having an escape route. So you're not really taking the risk when you make the decision to call your bully out. Your risk is already there. That's the point that they're trying to make. So when you go get to that place of exposing your bully, they say make sure that you present the business case that you've built. You basically want to show your employer that it's too expensive to keep this bully. And you present to the highest position that you can get to. So you don't go to HR. You go to the highest person you can find. But the point that they do make is that if you're in a small business or a family-owned business, you're probably pretty well screwed. You probably need to cut your losses and leave once you've been targeted. Because odds are they've kept that bully on for a reason. They have a relationship with that bully, or that bully's got some kind of information on them that has made that bully's place secure.
9 times out of 10, it's pictures involving the boss and a goat.
That's
just speculation on my part. But
we always figured that guy at that small rural hospital that I am intentionally not naming must have had something really big on the higher-ups in the corporation that I am intentionally not naming, because we could not figure out how on earth he managed to keep his job considering the number of complaints that were lodged against him.
It's amazing how it really works.
Yeah.
And how it really doesn't work. You know, because part of it, again, maybe just a little bit off topic, but here's the thing people to keep in mind, too. Like, in your, like the case you're describing and everything,
mm-hmm.
the boss, people above him made the decision, right? And now they don't want to be embarrassed and have to unmake that decision.
Good point.
And, you know, the hardest thing in the world for any of us is to admit that we fucked up. You know?
Very good point. Yeah, it's an awful lot of crow to eat when you have to fire a chief executive, you know?
Right. Right. I mean, it should happen a whole lot more often than it does.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So okay. The other recommendation they have when you're exposing your bully, stick to the bottom line, which means go back again and again and again to the business case for getting rid of that bully. Their point is being emotional discredits you. The minute you get emotional, they're going to blow you off.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
They also say give the employer one chance. If they side with the bully or if they rationalize the bully's behavior, don't jump ship because they're not going to help you.
Right.
And then the other thing they say is the way that you depart determines how long it will take you to rebound and get to your next job. They make a recommendation that I'm not that crazy about. They say tell everyone about the bully because you have nothing to be ashamed of. And I don't know that that's such a great strategy because that doesn't necessarily help you where you're trying to get back on your feet in your next job.
No, because, you know, several things there. First of all, your next employer is not going to want to hear it.
Right.
They're not going to want to know that you had a problem. They're not necessarily going to hire you if they think that you had a problem in the last place.
And they're not necessarily going to care.
Right. Oh, let me be clear. Not necessarily is the wrong term. They're absolutely not going to care. It's not their business, not their problem.
The other thing that I would say about who you take it to when you expose the bully, make sure you're taking it to the right person. One of the things that happened to me when I did take my case to who I thought was the right person in that small rural hospital, I thought I was reporting to the right person. I was reporting to the compliance officer there. Several other people made reports to the corporate compliance officer. And then when it came down to someone really pushing and saying, hey, look at the number of reports that have been made about this guy. The response was, well, yeah, but they never reported to the right person. So all of the reports that had been made basically just went up in smoke.
Yes, but if that was their answer, they would have gone up in smoke for a different reason had you reported to the so-called right person.
Sure, I suspect that's the case.
Because that's the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard in my life, right? Which is, oh, they didn't come to us. Well, yeah, they did come to you. Well, I'm sorry, they didn't come to the right person about that. Huh? You knew about this problem. Obviously, there's a trail and history and everything. But because they didn't come to the right person, you're just discounting everything? Go fuck yourself.
Right. I mean, it was pretty clear that they were aware of him as a problem. But, you know, their argument was, well, it wasn't reported in the appropriate channels, therefore there's not appropriate documentation, therefore.
That is the silliest shit I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. I mean, like I said, he pretty much took a really great place and destroyed it.
And how much did he make for doing it? You got the golden parachute, right?
Oh, I'm not sure. I can't even begin to imagine how much he walked away with.
Yeah, because, I mean, I saw that, right? He landed on his feet, right? He already had a gig at another... He got a gig at another hospital.
Sure, yeah. He didn't... No harm to his reputation or career. You know?
And this is another thing, too, where it's like, hey, you people are not doing your job. And by you people, I mean the people who are hiring people like this. Because, you know, I would think that looking at the results, the fucking train wreck
That he left?
That he left, yeah, might be something you might want to consider before offering him another job. Or, in America, probably not.
I will tell you that he is working now in a coastal Alaska native village where there is a great deal of fishing and there's a crab industry. And there are a number of us who keep expecting that we're going to hear that he was used as crab bait. And we wouldn't be terribly disappointed.
That's some crazy ass shit is what that is. Some crazy ass shit.
So that's my primer on... Oh, no, I actually have a little bit more. I'm sorry. That's not quite the end of the primer on taking care of yourself in a bullying situation. So a couple more things. So your personal health is the number one priority. They do say that one of the reasons they encourage people to go through the process of tabulating the cost of bullying is that it helps kind of distract you from the emotional damage that you're experiencing and makes you put one foot in front of the other as you're going through this. And I've got to tell you, as someone who's experienced it, who's really lived it, there are days you just don't want to get out of bed. So to have something that's making you kind of put one foot in front of the other is not necessarily a bad thing. The other thing is to really recognize that your employer is responsible for creating and maintaining a healthy work environment. So, you know, as people who go into these workplaces and are potentially targets of bullies, we need to hold our employers responsible for calling this behavior into account. I mean, the truth is they've probably known about this bully all along, and they have chosen to keep the bully for whatever reason. So we need to call them on it. In fact, there's a legal term called negligent retention, which is used in bullying cases where people have won, because it's proof that these employers have known about this behavior and they've retained that employee anyway.
Yeah, well...
The other thing that I thought was really interesting is that the trauma of the target is intensified if you leave the job voluntarily or not. If you don't kind of own what happened to you and point out the bully on your way out. So if you kind of skulk away and say nothing, you tend to be more traumatized and you tend to need more rebound time than you do if you're very clear about what your experience was and why you're leaving.
That's just an interesting psychological side effect of being human.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, it's taken me a lot of work to get past what happened to me at that little hospital, and I actually wrote a blog entry a couple of weeks ago, I think I mentioned it on the podcast, that really made me realize I hadn't fully grieved it yet. It was pretty hard. So now I'm done talking about workplace bullying. I think it's really important that that we acknowledge it. It's out there, that we call people on it. You know, I will say, as I look back through some of this stuff, I recognize that there were times that I have not been an ideal coworker. And I've said and done shit that I'm ashamed of, that I wish I had been a better coworker in some situations. And it was at times when I was stressed and times when I was not happy where I was working. So I'm hoping that looking at this is going to help me be a better person in the long run too. But I was never a bully to the degree that that son of a bitch at that little hospital was. I'll tell you that much. All right, so let's move on to something a little lighter. I don't have any feedback this week. Do you have any feedback?
Yeah, I just want to say hey to Tom in the Bay Area, my uncle, who's been checking us out. And, hey, thanks for taking a look, and hope you like what you're seeing.
Hey, Tom, welcome aboard.
All right, and then let's move on to Oh, By the Way.
Okay. You go
So,
first.
oh yeah, because Carly Fiorina, right? My favorite psychopath.
Your favorite workplace bully.
Oh my God, right? This is a woman who destroyed Compaq when she decided that HP needed to buy Compaq, put Compaq out of business. Damn near bankrupted HP over the whole deal, and HP has struggled ever since to figure out who they are and what they are and everything. And, series of bad men, you can't really blame Carly for where HP is today, so that's not the point. But the point is that this stupid fucking psychopath is now running for president.
This is actually her second run, isn't it?
She ran for Senate in California and
Okay.
got trounced by Feinstein, which isn't really a surprise. But the thing is that, I mean, she got out of HP with the big golden parachute. She goes around talking about how HP, her time in the business world and everything really has prepared her to be president and all this other stuff, and it's total fucking bullshit. Now, having said all that, because apparently I still have some deep-seated hatred for her. But, so anyway, she was in Iowa, right, ramping up for the Iowa straw poll, that really stupid fucking thing that we do to pick a winner of people who are not even going to be in the race come 6 months from now or whatever. But anyway, interesting enough, right? She did really well. Where was this? This was at the Lincoln Day dinner. And all of the usual suspects were there, Santorum, Bush, and Fiorina. Fiorina, I'm saying her name wrong. Anyway, I don't care. I hate her so much.
You hate her so much you can't even speak her name.
Name, that's right. But anyway, apparently though, she caught fire there, right? And people were like really impressed with her. But as the New York Times put it, Carly talks, Iowa swoons, and the polls shrug. Which is to say that she went from 1% to 2%. Can't you go find another company to run? That's my oh, by the way. And how much I hate this woman.
And let's be clear, you don't hate her because she's a Republican. You don't hate her because she's a woman. You hate her because she was a terrible CEO who ruined a company and now thinks that she wants to do the same thing to the country.
Right, that would be my interpretation of her so-called abilities. Yep.
Well, I said I wasn't going to touch it, but I'm doing it. So my oh by the way is Josh Duggar. And my oh by the way is Josh Duggar for two big reasons.
Fuck that guy.
Well, so first of all, my big oh by the way is that this guy's crimes got covered up. And his crimes got covered up by his church. It got covered up by local law enforcement. It got covered up by a judge who asked for his records to be expunged. It got fucking covered up by a major television channel. Don't tell me that TLC had no idea. I don't believe that.
I'm not sure that I think that they did know it, because it's an awful risk to be taking. But
God, I don't know, but all I know is that we know that he admitted to molesting at least five girls and his crimes were covered up.
oh yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's truly, truly sickening what this guy did. He's a piece of shit. Yeah, but then to stand up as being so moral. I mean, that just defies logic. But I think I'm going to jump ahead of you as to where you're going, which is these people that are coming out to defend him.
That was part of where I was going, so go for it. Go ahead, because I've got more.
Huckabee, or
Huckabee, yep.
Huckabee. It's just, again, the hypocrisy of this is insane. This guy molested kids. But, he's okay because God forgave him. What the fuck?
Right.
If a Dem did anything like this, you guys would be calling for his ball sack.
Well, and the other thing I wanted to point out, and I pointed it out on our Facebook page, is that in rushing to the defense of Josh Duggar, people like Mike Huckabee are ignoring the trauma experienced by the young women who were molested. And there's so much evidence coming out now that says that not only are there psychological ramifications of having this kind of trauma, but there are long-lasting, lifelong physical complications from experiencing trauma. And I'm not just talking about their sexual health. I'm talking about things like diabetes, high blood pressure, higher risk of heart disease. People who experience trauma as children have higher risk of physical disease. So this is really serious stuff. And these crimes against these young women were brushed under the carpet and they got no help. To the best of our knowledge, they got no help. And the rate of recidivism in the pedophile community is huge. And he got no treatment or help. So, you know, who's to say that he has not had more victims since this first crime or this first series of crimes?
Right. Well, you know, Mike Huckabee, for one.
Right. The other... go ahead.
Well, here's the other thing, though, for me, right, is that Huckabee was like, shame on the press for dragging this out when the victims just want to forget it. How the fuck would you know, you fuckhead?
That's right.
You know? How would you know what the victims are thinking? Because, I mean, honestly, you clearly don't give a shit about them. You just want to cover up your good friend and vote-getter.
Well, and the other thing is these young women are being raised in a situation where they have no voice. Because they're women in a repressive, right-wing Christian society, they're being raised in a situation where they have no voice. So it doesn't matter what they want, their voices are not going to be heard.
And so we'd just like to say, thanks, Mike, for showing us where you really stand on these things.
Yeah, so anybody who's thinking about voting for Mike Huckabee, please remember this incident. The other reason I wanted to bring up Josh Duggar is that his mother was instrumental in a robocall campaign last fall in Arkansas that basically was trying to make it so that trans people had to use the bathrooms that were the bathrooms of their gender of birth origin. So, for example, a person who was born as male but transitioned to female would still have to use the male bathroom. And her rationale was that someone who is a male to female trans person is a danger to women. So a female trans person is a danger to other women. Well, interestingly enough, it turns out that her son is a danger to other women.
So fuck the whole family.
So I would just like to point out that she's a fucking hypocrite too. And she Absolutely. Was doing this robocall campaign knowing that her son had molested at least 5 young girls when he was 14. So,
Including her daughters.
So, fuck them.
Right. Okay. And on that happy note...
Well, I do want to bring us up a little bit. So, this is my traditional Memorial Day... my Memorial Day thing. So there was a wonderful little filly named Sergeant Reckless who served in the Korean War. And I would really encourage people to Google Sergeant Reckless and know her story and just recognize the countless dogs and horses and other animals who served and died in the wars that the United States has been involved in over the last 200 years. It's not just a human cost when we go to war. So, happy Memorial Day.
Thank you.
And on that note, I guess we really are done.